Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show. Today's episode focuses not only on business advice, but also life design. So I want you to think about something for a moment. Did you ever feel like you've reached success, but there's something missing? Or you're feeling at a loss and you can't quite figure out why life doesn't feel like a total win? Well, that's where my special guest comes into the picture. Joining me on the show is Heather White. She is the CEO of 2020 Communications. Heather came out of the corporate world to become a business advisor, a life designer, and a speaker who helps professionals to find new dreams that speak to who they've become after succeeding at their early goals. Heather's here to share her journey and her advice with you. Heather, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, you know, I mentioned, and we're so happy to have you here too. I mentioned that you've spent a lot of time on the corporate side, and then you made this big transition into business coaching and being a life designer. So now you're empowering others to win the game. What led you to leave the corporate world and to become an entrepreneur?
Well, I'm living the same journey that so many of my clients are living today. And in that time, for me, I was just extremely unhappy. And it was such a dichotomy I was stuck in because I had done everything I had been raised and socialized and conditioned to believe I needed to do to live, you know, the so-called happy, successful life. And by so many measures, I had reached success. You know, I was raised for many years by a single mom, immigrated from Scotland, had grown up poor and, you know, wasn't able to go to post-secondary education. And so she really instilled in me how important education was and stability and security and all these things. And so here I found myself, you know, graduated from university, had a great corporate job. And within the job, I was working in outside sales. I had so much flexibility and freedom. It was pre-2008. There was lots of budget dollars. You know, the company was very supportive. I had great mentorship, opportunity to go to conferences. You know, so it, this all sounds really great, right?
Yeah, it does sound great. And so, it really does.
And so that was the struggle because it was so great. And yet something inside was so not great. And I tried, you know, to put it to rest, put it to bed, you know, be grateful. I tried all these, you know, different practices and things. And yet the truth was I wasn't happy inside. And that actually was a beautiful thing. And I've come to believe in this moment, I didn't know this then, but I do believe actually that our suffering is not punishment. It's guidance. It's a nudge from within. And I'm glad I finally listened and didn't just continue tolerating despite the fact that I had all these boxes checked, because it led me down a path of really trying to seek and understand where was the source of my happiness, and what was not working, and then how to shift that into what would work and really design a life to match me. Because up until that, I had always been trying to fit me into what I believed I was supposed to be in order to be successful and happy. And so that was really what, you know, prompted me to leave the corporate arena. It was, you know, through finding a coach myself outside of athletics for the first time. I'd never heard of coaching before that time, but I found a coach and then I found another coach. And before I knew it, an offer was being made to me by a colleague of mine who was working as a business coach and advisor, saying that he would be happy to fund the startup of my company after I expressed some interest in leaving the corporate arena and spending my time doing a more coaching consulting role and really designing my professional life to match how I wanted to live and how I wanted to feel.
Well, it's really interesting that you were able to sort of move forward. There's so many people, I think, that feel that uneasiness, or maybe they're not happy, but they don't act upon that. Now, you mentioned that you had a coach and you were in sports. Was that something that, you know, when it was time to move into a new realm, that finding a different kind of coach or advisor, how did you know actually to pursue one to help you to make that move?
You know, the funny thing is, I didn't know. It was a series of what I would call moments of divine intervention. I actually got a call from one of my clients inviting me to join a mastermind group. And at this time, I had never heard of a mastermind, and I was already quite, you know, sort of cynicism had set in as sort of this cloak over my unhappiness. And she explains to me, a mastermind is a group of, you know, we're kind of going to be a peer advisory group. We're going to support each other with their goals and, you know, set forward our desires and help one another and et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, oh gosh, that sounds terrible. I don't want to be a part of that. And she kept pushing me and pushing me. And so finally I said, oh, whatever. I'll, you know, sure. Okay, fine. So I dial into this mastermind call for the first time, and it's being facilitated by a life coach. So it was, you know, an accident that I ended up there. And then I started to really fall in love with the information that they were sharing. It was just the right vehicle, the right messenger, the right message at the right time for me. And she had been trained by a gentleman named Bob Proctor. And so it spurred me on to want to go to the source and study the material of Bob. So I ended up joining his company, Life Success Consultants, at the time, and training under him in his coaching and consulting program, which was more of a personal development program than anything, a series of educational courses, I guess, is the best way to describe it, lessons that you work your way through. And that was really my introduction to coaching. And then again, through, you know, sort of an accident, a former colleague of my stepfather's, I was introduced to, and he was also working in coaching after having sold his technology company, and realizing that there was this real need for sort of a right-hand man or woman to be with these entrepreneurs and professionals that didn't necessarily have a sober second thought or a sacred sort of safe place that they could go and discuss what was going on for them, you know, personally and professionally. And so those two things sort of converged at the same time and woke me up to this new concept and new offering. And it really fit who I was as a person. I'd always loved training and supporting and coaching people. I just didn't know that there was a formal profession in which you could facilitate that role through.
Well, it seems like a lot of things fell into place at once, which, you know, if you think about what you're doing now as compared to before, what do you actually love the most? And maybe you could share what you like the least, if anything.
You know, I've been doing this now for 10 years, and it has definitely evolved and morphed. And in the early days, coming out of corporate and coming out of business development, I was, you know, and having a partner in the beginning, we were very, very focused on business development. And what I learned quickly was that I actually cared a lot more about the people than I did about the profit models. Not that I don't think they're important, but if I had to pick one over the other, I much preferred supporting people with growth from what I would call the inside out, instead of sort of just working on the outside. And so, you know, today what I love the most about my work is to be in the presence of somebody who is saying yes to changing their mind. It is one of the most magical, miraculous things to sit in the presence of somebody who was attached to a certain thought pattern, belief system, way of operating, and is willing to shift that, and then to watch them shift that internally, and then to watch the changes that happen externally in their life is, I think, one of the most high definition reality TV experiences anybody can have. And I feel blessed and honored.
Personal.
It's like, this is high definition TV right here. It's fabulous. And I love it. And it never disappoints. It's just, It's almost beyond words, really, to describe it. What I probably love the least is the loneliness, I guess, in a way. You know, it'd be working alone. And very specifically right now, I don't have an assistant, which I had for many, many years. I'm just in between on that. And that's probably definitely the part I don't like, is just finding the way to stay in sort of in community when you're working alone so much. And, you know, working as an advisor is very different than working as a peer. That's probably the part I like the least. But I'm in the process right now of sort of, again, with, you know, in reference to life design, having sort of uncovered that, to figure out how could it look differently for me, in terms of taking that away and having to not work so isolated. So work in progress. We'll see.
Yeah, I've heard from other entrepreneurs, especially those coming out of the corporate world or doing something significantly different, that it is lonely at times. And, you know, I think it's good to be able to find your network or your tribe, whether you're doing that online or physically networking. So one thing that, you know, comes with the territory of being an entrepreneur is stepping out of your comfort zone, which I wanted to ask you because, you know, you gave a TEDx talk. So I can only imagine that would have to be maybe in some way, shape, or form, because it is different, right? Stepping out of your comfort zone. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you were feeling about it, the prep work that was involved, and why this talk is maybe different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, great question. And it was so different. You know, for me, one of the things I love about presenting and giving talks is being in communion with the audience. I love to do sort of a version of a bit of stand-up comedy and some truth bombs and just some great, you know, I love when people laugh and we engage in the information in a way that's very light. And there's some back and forth, right? Even in a keynote, you can do that. With the TEDx experience, it was totally different in the sense that, A, they have a lot of formal criteria, which I totally appreciate. You're recording yourself and sending your talk into them. They're vetting you. They're making suggestions back. It's very much a collaborative process with the organizers of the event. And, you know, they're doing so to ensure that they're curating the talks that they're hosting, you know, for an audience, not only in person, but also it lives online forever. And so it was a lot of different kind of rehearsal. For me, I like to tell stories normally when I'm giving keynotes, and I don't rehearse like every word I'm going to say or where my inflections and my voice will go or anything like that, because I totally trust myself. I'm going to tell a story. It's a story that I know, and I'll just be in the moment. So I more piece together my talks based on the points I want to make, the lessons I want to talk about, and which stories are going to really amplify those messages. In this case, it was much more like rehearsing for like an audition for a movie or something, that I was playing a role and I had to know every word that I was going to say and how I was going to say it and what tone. And so in that way, it felt very different. It wasn't probably my most fluid talk, I will say, mm-hmm. because you are, by nature of the design of that model, somewhat stuck in your head. So the only thing that doesn't really leave room for is sort of the magic that can happen from the stage, where you have a general idea and outline of what you're going to say, but you're totally present in the moment and sometimes something else comes up or something else comes out, or it comes out in a different way, or you add a joke at just the right moment, that it wasn't planned, right? In this case, the TEDx experience was very planned. It was also, I found, probably the most nervous I've ever been taking the stage. I'm always nervous, but that was probably the most intense. Probably, again, you know, it lives online forever. The expectations from the organizers, you know, it's, for me anyways, being a reformed high achiever and recovering perfectionist, which means I do have relapses. You're just worrying, you know, oh my gosh, am I going to get it right for them and for the audience? And so there was a lot more mental gymnastics that went on for that experience. But that being said, I wouldn't trade it. It was fabulous.
Oh, that's awesome. And can you get a sense of your audience and their reaction? Can you tell if you're being well received, or people clapping while you were speaking, or, you know, how can you tell? Or is it just that 18-minute talk? Is that the time frame, 18 minutes, or is it?
Yeah. And for us, we were given 15, no more than 15 minutes for our particular event, because the TEDx stages are basically licensing models off the main TED event. So the organizers can set whatever they want within the parameters of what TED is asking them or mandating them. So for us, we were given 15 minutes. And I think my talk ended up coming in around the 14-minute mark, or 13 and a half minutes, which, of course, you look back after, I probably left out a part, right? One thing I was going to say that I just, there, it just left, right?
Exactly.
In terms of, you know, reading the audience, absolutely, you can, for sure. That particular context I found the most difficult of any audience I've ever had to read, that being said. It was just very different. There's so many cameras there. I think even for the audience, they feel a little different. Our particular venue was an aircraft hangar. So it was a very unique and interesting venue, but it was very bright. It was just a very different experience, I think, for everybody, including the audience. But yeah, they clapped at the end. So that's a good sign, I think.
That's a good sign. I'm glad they did that. Good for you.
Without anybody holding up a sign. Nobody had to hold up a sign that said clap now.
Okay. Exactly. You have flashing signs. Applause, please. let's pivot to your business. So, because, you know, owning your own business can also be out of your comfort zone a bit. What were some of the obstacles maybe that you faced as you were building your coaching and life design business? Did you find that it was easy to generate clients right away?
Another awesome question. You know, I think there's been so many obstacles along the way, and they make you stronger. They build your resilience and they keep you on your toes. And there still is every day. I think for me, probably one of the most challenging things I found was really defining what I did. Because in the early days, it was easy to find what I was doing because there was such tactics involved in business development. But when I wanted to shift more to be much more of a personal advisor, mindset advisor, really helping people, frankly, on the spiritual growth path, really, in terms of where they were at as a human being, experiencing their life, and how we could start to shift those inner dialogues, programs, narratives, beliefs, etc. I found it really tough to put that to words and to really stand in conviction, you know, behind that. I found it tough to market, even also, frankly, just for my own belief in the value of what I was doing. So it took me, you know, quite a while since totally abandoning strictly business development coaching to really stand in my power around that. And certainly it's not always been easy to get clients. I was really fortunate when I first started, my first client was my former corporate employer. Because I had been a trainer walking out of that environment for their sales reps. And I was very clear about what some of the gaps were and what some of the opportunities really were. And so the first, client I signed was them. And the director of sales at the time, who was a fan and a mentor of mine, was quick to say yes. And so I got my start quickly and somewhat easily, and then had some more blips on the radar later on, and like a roller coaster, ups and downs for sure. The obstacles. I mean, just everything, understanding how, like, tax and incorporation and, it's one thing after another. You wear lots of hats, as I'm sure you know and your listeners know. You just embrace every single one. You learn as you go. We're not perfect. We figure it out. Somebody's always done it before, so you just get a hold of that person and say, help.
It's always good to know when to ask for help. that's so important, especially as you're navigating, right? There's always going to be those ups and downs. I mean, I just think about starting one of my first businesses, and you start out with the ups and downs, and then you might be soaring along, and then you're going to have some more ups and downs. I think it's just par for the course as an entrepreneur. Heather, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for now. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. I'd also like to mention that Women Worldwide is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. So you can check out our episodes at c-suiteradio.com. And be sure also to check out some of the other great podcasts that are there too. And when we get back from the break, Heather's going to share her thoughts on working through resistance and the power of saying no.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Heather White and I were just chatting about what it means to be a life designer as well as a business advisor. So Heather, we left off, we were talking about, you know, everything from your transition to the roller coaster, the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. And I did, before we jump into resistance, I wanted to ask you one question about, maybe you could share what's the most important lesson that you've learned as you've been going along as an entrepreneur.
It sounds so cliche, but it is so true. And it really is to trust your intuition or gut or whatever you want to call that. I've had so many moments in time where I have overridden my more energetic, intuitive, non-rational feeling about something because I thought to myself, oh, maybe I had too much coffee this morning, or, you know, rationalizing something, only to realize, no, that was the most true capital T feeling I could have been having at the time. And so I made a pact with myself a long time ago that even if I didn't understand it, I would trust it. When I start to get a sense that something is off, I just get out. Because what I've learned, you know, whether it's taking on a client that's not a fit, or taking on a partner that's not a fit, or staying in a partnership too long, the pain comes eventually anyways, so you might as well listen and pay attention. And getting out of things that you've gotten into when you intuitively knew something was off in the beginning, I don't know. I just, at this stage, I don't want to suffer any more than I need to. So it's definitely been that, you know, to really, truly trust that part, that gut feeling, that intuitive feeling, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that is such an important one. And the word suffer, right? We definitely shouldn't have to suffer over anything. I remember one of my guests said something that sort of stuck with me. It was that, yes, we're going to experience pain, but we're not going to choose suffering. So when that gut starts talking, you know what? You sort of have to dig a little bit deeper and think about it and make your decision. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about resistance. So maybe, and we all face resistance, maybe you can describe what resistance means to you and how it affects moving forward. And what are some of the more common forms of resistance that you see in the professionals that you work with?
Oh, what a fabulous question. Okay. To me, I mean, resistance to me means we're at the edge of the paradigm. It's really exciting, I find. It's when someone pushes back kind of viscerally, almost automatically, you know you are tapping on something exciting because we've reached the threshold. You know, we operate within a certain set of beliefs and ideas and concepts and values and things we hold to be true. And so when you challenge somebody on something, you know, even the possibility that maybe there's, maybe if, you know, is there 1% possibility that this may be true? And when they push really hard back, you know, you hit something exciting. And that's what my work is all about, you know, and it's a dance and it's an art and a science because, yes, you want people to be willing to shift and move into what is possible and really lean into their potential and the destiny that they have the opportunity to reach in their lifetime. But at the same time, honoring their process and their pace because everybody's a little different around that. You know, but it shows up in all kinds of ways. It shows up in excuses. It shows up in narrative. It shows up in energy. It shows up, so many ways. I'd have to really think. But that's usually what it is. It's a habitual way of operating that has served you up until now. That is pushing against the idea that it is going to be surrendered for a new way. And it usually fights kicking and screaming to go.
Do you think that it's easier to push through resistance in your work world than it is personally? Or do you think that when somebody, it's across the board? Mm-hmm. So how you handle resistance in your personal life is how you're going to handle it when you encounter it in business.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating question. I actually don't know the answer to that. For me, I see, because I really believe everything is all a reflection of your inner state of being, you know, whether it's whatever mirror you're looking into, your work mirror, your personal mirror, your recreational mirror, your social mirror, you're seeing you. You're seeing sort of the vibe you're in. However, I think, you know, maybe based on risk analysis that you have or how you perceive the risk, how much risk you perceive there to be, certainly you could probably operate in slightly different ways in reference to that. It's interesting. I think, though, the cool thing is it almost has a bit of a domino effect in the sense that when you transcend something that you have held on to and seek a new way, a new perspective, a new way from which to look at your life, and you leave an old way of operating behind, an old way of thinking or a belief or something that you once thought to be true but you've shifted, it creates a ripple effect across the board. Essentially what you've done is cleansed your own lens of awareness, and it's you know, your lens of awareness is how you see your entire world. So just because you make a shift, and transcend something in your professional capacity, that lens of awareness is still relevant for your personal life, your social life, your all across the board. So I think wherever life is calling you to lean in, to change, and to then experience your resistance, understand what it is so that you can see it for what it is. It's like a Wizard of Oz behind a curtain, and you can pull the curtain back and talk to the little man back there. And then go through the process. And everybody has a slightly different process in how they're going to overcome it, transcend it, you know, whatever you want, however you want to think of it. I don't really like the idea of sort of beating back resistance as if you're in some war. It's more like a dissolving, like a pixelation suddenly just falls away because it no longer has the value that it once had. And then you just start to see everything differently.
I think that's so interesting, the way that you phrase that. Cleanse your lens of awareness. How you see your entire world, and you mentioned the pixelation. And I just wonder, everything, isn't it just one big cycle of resistance? And if, which in a good way, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do we never stop with resistance? And if we did, we might be dead.
I think we would. Totally.
Because everything you do, if you're on the right track, you should constantly be pushing forward or feeling challenged. You know, mm-hmm. The minute you feel like you're complacent and there's mm-hmm. no resistance, I would think that's a time you'd have to reevaluate.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't be alive.
Absolutely. Totally. And I think so often we misinterpret it, right? We're kind of, through many marketing messages, especially in the Western culture, it's almost like we're kind of conditioned to think that there is some holy grail upon which we will arrive and everything will be easy and flowy and we'll be, you know, thin and beautiful and all these other things, you know, forever in perpetuity. And yet we do know on some other level that that is all a bunch of hogwash.
It is hogwash.
Right? Yeah. And so, you know, it is a journey. Absolutely. And if you're not, I don't know, if you're not experiencing, I think also part of it has to do with how identified we get with our personality and who we think we are, if you will. And a lot of that creates resistance in and of itself, because you're essentially shifting who you thought you were.
Right. And you, if you're changing, I think what I'm hearing you say is that if you're shifting into a new version of yourself, the resistance would naturally be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because essentially it's that egoic part of us, right? That thought it was the suit in the closet.
Well, not it's one a fascinating of, discussion.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. This is, I think that, you know, it makes you step back and think about resistance in actually a positive way. So Heather, wanted to ask you, you know, I think we all get so busy as entrepreneurs. We have to, choices are so important. Time is precious. When did you discover the power of saying no? And what did that actually do for your career?
Oh, wow. That would be a tough one to actually pinpoint. You know, my first business partner and first mentor in the entrepreneurship arena was very good. And I think I learned it, you know, kind of through osmosis, through working with him, because he was very, very clear. Almost maybe to a fault. It almost was arrogant, but I learned so much about, you know, this is the model we created. This is the offer. This is what we're willing to do. And this is what we're not willing to do. And it was always presented in a very, you know, lovely way. It was a choice, right? This is how it is, take it or leave it kind of thing. And to say no outside of, you know, anything that didn't work there, everything from, you know, when do you do your best work? And so someone asked, I just got an email this morning. Do you have any times today after 8 PM? I thought, absolutely not. I don't work after 6 PM. Never mind taking a random call. Right. But it's not, you know, I think being raised as someone to be, you know, very pleasing and making sure that you're always being of service and doing everything you can to be kind and whatnot, I found it challenging in the early days because I think I perceived it to be that saying no was going to hurt other people. And the truth is, what I've come to realize is saying no is one of the greatest gifts you can offer your human family, because essentially what you're saying no to means you're saying yes to what does work for you, which means you're keeping yourself healthy, happy, in the highest vibration possible energetically. And everything we do, every act we take is infused with the energy in which we take it in. And so if we're constantly going around, you know, agreeing to things that don't actually quite work for us, all we do is lower our vibe and then put out a mediocre, you know, actions into the world, which doesn't really benefit anybody. So to me, it's actually the most benevolent outcome is to say no to the things that don't work for you. So you say yes to showing up as the greatest version of yourself as often as possible. I still think I have to practice. I learn it every day. I still make mistakes. I still say yes when I should have said no, and then don't notice it until it's too late in retrospective and have to, you know, circle back or figure it out or go through with something because that, you know, your integrity is there, and try to remember not to make that mistake again. So I'm certainly not perfect in that department, but it does save a lot of energy and suffering, as we've discussed already.
That little word no is so powerful, Heather. You're absolutely right. And you know what? I love that you said it's a great gift, and it really does benefit everyone when you could say no. You know what? Let's talk a little bit more about, so now that we're saying no and yes, still practicing, everybody needs to do that every so often. You want to focus your energy and really move forward with all of the great opportunities. So as an entrepreneur, how are you keeping your energy and focus, and where are you drawing that energy and focus from?
You know, I've been in mindful practice for many, many years, and that's probably the greatest source of drawing energy for me. It takes different forms and looks different ways. Sometimes, you know, it's as simple as making sure I get some time in nature on a regular basis. Sometimes it's, you know, a pretty formal sitting meditation practice. But I find just taking the actions that allow me a little bit of sacred space every day seems to provide this real great bedrock of foundation for energy. The other thing is, you know, I truly, after years of making many, many mistakes, take exceptionally good care of myself, you know, in terms of what I eat, nutritional value, my, you know, getting really great rest, and drinking, you know, hydration, all those things, you know, I battled against them and tried to push through with the willpower and the one extra coffee for so long, only just to discover it was not serving anybody, most especially not me. And so over the years, I've got a little smarter or wiser, whatever, which way you want to think about it. Because I find, you know, when I take, you know, good care of myself, I have much better ideas. I'm much more clear. You know, my main job is to listen and to be totally present, because it's in the little innuendos, it's in the little things people say, it's in that one little thing that we could have glossed over, but something about my intuition says, time out, there's something here to look at. And so I think it's imperative for me, particularly in the work I do, to be really, really present and focused with people so that I can grab those little moments where the real magic and miracles are.
Well, it also sounds like you have to be so aware of yourself and what you said about the coffee, because I don't know, that's a habit that starts for so many of us, whether it's you start it when you're in school and you're cramming for exams, or you're in the business world and you need to stay up a few more hours, or you're an entrepreneur, it's your own company. Breaking a habit can be really, really tough. And I just want to plug a book I'm reading, actually. It's called The Power of Habit, which it studies the brain and gets you to understand how habits start and really what your brain does when a habit forms. So how did you actually break that habit? Because that's super hard. I don't think I could ever break a coffee habit.
Well, altogether. I still have a coffee. I have one a day. And on the odd occasion, I'll have two, and that's in the early morning. I think it's fascinating, as I too have researched a lot about this, and actually one thing that I totally gave up was alcohol, which I know that's not for everybody, but for me, it was just, it affected my
sleep.
That's
hard to do.
Yeah. The funny thing is, and I think what really, it is as simple, not to be mistaken for easy, I just made the decision after years of sort of recognizing, gosh, you know, I kind of drag my butt in the morning if I have a, you know, a glass of wine or two the night before. And I was aware that it was affecting my energy. But I sort of lived in my head about it, you know, dancing around mentally with these mental gymnastics around it. And one day I literally just decided, I'm done. That's enough. And I wasn't ever planning to quit indefinitely. Although once I had gone by the 3-month mark and then the 6-month mark, I didn't want to anymore.
Right.
I felt so great. So I still have a coffee, but I don't have 10, and I don't drink it throughout the entire day. But I definitely did find cutting out the alcohol just made me sharper. I also take a lot of supplements, you know, that I work with a nutritionist, because, you know, the bottom line is we're not getting a lot of the nutrients that we once got through the natural sources. And so it is important to pay attention to, especially as, you know, and hormones are not just a women thing, they're a human thing, but to pay attention to our hormones and how our bodies are functioning, because, you know, we can be doing all the right things and there can be something little that's still not functioning optimally, and to, you know, to give yourself permission to uncover whatever you need to in order to live your best, most optimal life, I think is the ultimate gift we can give to ourselves.
Absolutely. And your body changes over the years. So whatever you were doing before will have a different outcome and effect on you, whether that's the caffeine intake, the supplements you're taking, the wine that you're drinking. That makes a lot of sense, Heather. Thanks for sharing that. Also, if you would, maybe you could just give some parting advice to other professionals who want to move forward in a big and different ways, knowing that they've reached goals, but now it's time for something different.
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing we can do is turn inward more than we turn outward. You know, we live in a very doing culture. It's a lot about acquisition of new ideas, new knowledge, read this book, listen to this podcast, study this, go to here, do that. And I think the greatest gift we have is the cultivation of our own self-awareness. I think the books are great. I think they're affirmations that other people have discovered through a process of self-awareness, a path that worked for them. And I think those are affirmations that the paths to happiness and fulfillment and meaningful work and contribution are possible. I think the mistake we're making is that we're looking in those books for our path. And the truth is, our path to the greatest possibility of our lives is already inside of us. And so a little bit less time trying to get it from the outside and a little bit more time exploring, you know, your relationship with yourself from the inside, I think is the way to, you know, having this great expression of the possibility of your life. And so that would be my advice to anybody listening.
Heather, that was excellent advice. It's almost like looking within yourself first and before you would ever move forward to anything big. Okay, last question. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
I live online at heatherwhite.ca. That's probably the best place to find me. And my social media channel of great joy these days is Instagram. So you can find me over there as well. that's the best places to find me.
Heather, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your career journey and all of your tips and advice. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it was absolutely my honor. Thank you for such great questions and such a rich conversation. Thank you to everybody who listened.
And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered.